We're holding by the Mishnah on Kuf Nun Vav Amud Beis, bottom of the Amud. Continuing on this topic of Matnas Shchivmirah and finishing it off, we learned in the previous Mishnah, Machloikas, about whether with a Matnas Shchivmirah you need a kinyan or not. Rabbi Eliezer or Rabbi Lozer had said that you do. And the Chachamim had said that no divish shchivmerah k'ksuvin v'chim esurin damu, that what a shchivmerah says is as if it's written and signed, and no further kinyan is needed. So now, continuing on that topic, the Mishnah says, Rabbi Eliezer Omer. Rabbi Eliezer says, and here it's definitely Rabbi Eliezer, because we're going to have Rabbi Yeshua arguing with him, and Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua are always the two. Whenever we find an argument with Rabbi Yeshua, most of the time it's Rabbi Eliezer, his chaver. So here it's definitely Rabbi Eliezer. Tosfos discussed earlier, as we talked about yesterday, that the previous Mishnah would be Rabbi Lozer. So then it comes out, since our Mishnah is going to draw a further distinction within that, when you need a kinyan and when you don't, it comes out according to Tosfos that there are three different opinions over here. You have the opinion of Rabbi Lozer. You have the opinion of Rabbi Lozer in the previous Mishnah that you always need a kinyan. You have the opinion of the Chachamim in the previous Mishnah that you don't, which would also be the opinion of Rabbi Yeshua in our Mishnah, and then Rabbi Eliezer, and then you have Rabbi Eliezer, whereas the Gemara, as the Mishnah is going to say, he draws a distinction between Shabbos and weekday. With that said, though, the printed Mishnayos instead have the Girsa over here, not Rabbi Eliezer Omer, but V'Chachamim Omerim. So then that would be a further opinion of the Chachamim that if you're going to make such a distinction about when the kinyan is needed, then you would distinguish between Shabbos and weekdays. The Tosfos Reed also says that while Tosfos had said before, the previous Mishnah has to be Rabbi Lozer, not Rabbi Eliezer, because otherwise, why are we repeating again something that Rabbi Eliezer is saying over here? They could have just combined it into one Mishnah and into one opinion. But the Tosfos Reed says no. What it means is that there are in fact only two opinions over here: Rabbi Eliezer and the Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim representing Rabbi Yeshua. So it just means, in other words, that even Rabbi Eliezer is not going to say that it's never the case that divrei shchivmirah k'ksuvin v'chim esurin. He's just going to distinguish between Shabbos and weekday. Okay, so the Mishnah says Rabbi Eliezer Omer, b'Shabbos dvarav kayamin. If he said it on Shabbos, then what he said is valid, and we don't need any further kinyan because he can't make a kinyan on Shabbos. Now we learned at the end of the Gemara yesterday that the Chachamim did. We had Rabbi Levi telling us that you could make a kinyan even on Shabbos, because Shemitah Torah Daiti Olav, because so he doesn't get agitated and worried about that it's not going to happen. But here Rabbi Eliezer is saying that listen, you can't actually do a kinyan on Shabbos. Therefore, instead, very simple, the Chachamim will have said that what he said is valid, and that's that. You don't need anything else. But not on weekdays, because on weekdays instead you can make a kinyan and you could write things and everything. Rabbi Yeshua says no. B'Shabbos Amru. Yes, we said that on Shabbos it works, and what he says is k'ksuvin v'chim esurin. Kavachoyim b'choil. How much more so on a weekday that the Chachamim made the takana that yes, that even though. Even though you could write it, Rashbam refers over here to the famous expression kol haroi labila, that when you have something that could have been done, then we can consider it as though it was already done. So in other words, the Kal v'Chomer would be madach on Shabbos where you can't make a kinyan, and the Chachamim would still say that's valid on weekdays where you could make a kinyan and just you didn't, but you have the ability to. How much more so that it should work. Similarly, Kayotze Boy, in a similar vein, since we're saying over here that we have a machlokas about like that, where Rabbi Eliezer is saying something and Rabbi Yeshua is saying on the contrary a Kal v'Chomer that it should apply even in a different case. So in a similar vein, Zochin Makaton, when it comes to you want to give something to a cotton. Now a cotton doesn't have the ability to be koina. And there is actually Tosfos discusses that zechiyah, the concept that you should be able to be mezak, the concept that you should be able, that somebody should be able to be zoicha or to be mezaka to him, would be mitam shlichus, would be based on the concept of shlichus, and a cotton doesn't have the ability to do shlichus. Actually, that's as far as the zochin over here. Elsewhere, the Gemara does say that a cotton is able to acquire. We say, for example, a cotton finds a metzia. So midaraisa, he's not koine midrabanan. We allow him to keep. We say nobody else should take it away from him. So one thing is there's a difference between das acheres makne, where somebody else is being makne to it, like here, where the shchivmara is giving it to him, versus there where he finds something on his own. Another point over here is that we might be talking about a child below the age. The Gemara mentions in Gittin, there's an age called Po'oitus, where they're old enough to understand what buying and selling is, and at that point you can be makna something to them. Below that age, no. Another point, these are all points that Tosfos makes elsewhere in Gittin in particular, where it discusses these dinim. Another point is that it's one thing you give him something into his hand, then he can be zoicha in it. We have every year Sukkos, we have the issue that if you give your lulav and esrog to a kid, then you're not going to be able to get it back because he doesn't have the ability to be maknet to you. So if you're giving a tame into his hand, there's one thing, but here we're talking about doing through kinyan chalifin, and therefore, that's different, that he doesn't have the das to understand. So again, Tosfos discusses those points elsewhere. In any case, so now, kayotzebe zochen lekotten vein zochen legodol. Similarly, if a person wants, we're not even talking about a shchivmera actually, we're talking about any person wants to give a matana to a cotton, you can be mezake to him through somebody else, you give it to somebody else to acquire on his behalf. Because again, he doesn't have, at least on a daraisa level, the ability to acquire it himself. So therefore, somebody else can be zoche for it on his behalf. The in zochen lagadol, but you can't do that on behalf of an older person because he could just be zoche in it himself. Divrei Rabbi Eliezer, that's what Rabbi Eliezer would say. And Rabbi Eliezer would say the whole concept of zochen laadam shalai b'fanav is only derabanan. Rabbi Yeshua, amen. Again, Rabbi Yeshua says in a similar vein to what he said, as far as the Shchiv Merah, Lekotten Omru, the Chachamim said that you can be Zoicha for a cotton, Kavachoyim Legadol, how much more so for a Gadol? Yes, he could be Zoicha in it for himself, but again, Koloroi Labila, precisely because he is capable of being Zoicha for himself, then therefore that's a reason why we should allow it to also happen through somebody else. So the point is, that second machlokas, the Mishnah is not really bringing in because it's relevant to our Masechta or to our Perek, but because it's phrased in a similar way to the previous machlokas where Rabbi Eliezer is saying something and Rabbi Yeshua is saying Kavachoyma, that it should apply in the other case as well. Well, the Gemara says, Masnisin Man, when we have our Mishnah with the first machlokas about Shabbos versus weekday, as far as the Shchiv Merah, Masnisin Mani, which Tana does our Mishnah go according to as far as the version of how the Machlokas went? And the answer is Rabbi Yehuda. The answer is that our Mishnah is according to Rabbi Yehuda's version of the Machlokas of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. The Tanya, we often find that, of course, that later Tanoim or sometimes Amiroim argue about what exactly were the opinions of the earlier Tanoim. So the Tanya, Reb Meir says that the machlokas goes as follows. Rabbi Eliezer Omer b'chol dvar of kayamin, that Rabbi Eliezer says on weekdays, just the opposite of our Mishnah, where Rabbi Eliezer had said that on Shabbos dvar of kayamin, here in the Braise, Reb Meir says that Rabbi Eliezer would say on weekdays, it works without any further kinyan, because he would be able to write out a kinyan. Avaloy b'Shabbos, but not on Shabbos because he can't make a kinyan, and therefore the matnas shchiv merah is not going to work. Rabbi Yeshua Omer, and according to that version, Rabbi Yeshua says b'chol omru. On the contrary, the Chachamim said that you can do it even on weekdays, even just verbally kavachoyim Shabbos, because you can't write, and we're concerned about shemati torif daitoi. Kayotzeboy, and similarly with the second machlokas, Zochan le Godova and Zochan le Kotten Divra Rabbi Eliezer, that according to the mayor, Rabbi Eliezer would say you can be Zoche you can be Mazaka through a third party on behalf of a Godol, not a Kotten, because again, a Godol has his own independent ability to acquire things, a Kotten does not. So therefore, by a cotton, you can't be mizakatem through a third party either. Divrei Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yeshua, I'm a godol, I'm a kavachom, a cotton. And Rabbi Eliezer would, and Rabbi Yeshua would say that this applies to a godol, and how much more so to a cotton, precisely because he can't be zoicha for himself, and therefore that the chachamim would make it possible to be zoicha through him, to him through somebody else. So again, here's where Tosfos points out that, Rabbi Eliezer would say that, look, the whole point of being zoicha through somebody else, of being mazaka through somebody else, is a matter of shlichus, and a cotton doesn't have a cotton doesn't have shlichus. So Rabbi Eliezer would say that. According to Rabbi Yehuda's version, which is going to be our Mishnah, that when it works for a cotton, is not for a gadol, is the other way around. That since a cotton is not able to acquire, then the chacham would make it possible for him to do it through a third party, whereas a gadol, that's not necessary. Anyway, so according to Rabbi Meir, our Mishnah would be phrased much differently, because according to Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Eliezer would say that the concept that Divrei Shchivmerak, Ksuvin v'chimisurin, is only on weekdays, not on Shabbos, and that the concept of being Zeuche would be only for a Gadol, not for a Katan, the opposite of our Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda, Omer, then the Braisa continues, Rabbi Yehuda says, and our Mishnah follows Rabbi Yehuda's version, Rabbi Eliezer, Omer, Shabbos, Dvar of Kayamin, that on Shabbos, what he says is valid without anything further, without any kinyan, because he can't write, and we're concerned about Shema Titarif Daite, Avaloi Bechoil, but not on weekdays where you could write it, and therefore Rabbi Eliezer would just say, go make the kinyan and write it. Rabbi Yeshua, Omer, Shabbos, Omer, Kavachom, Bechoil, and Rabbi Yeshua would say, as we said before, if it works on Shabbos, Kavachom, that it works on weekdays, if it works on Shabbos, where you can't even make the kinyan, and it's ainu roi labila, it's not even a suitable time for a kinyan, kavachomer that it would work on weekdays when it is a suitable time for a kinyan, whether they made one or not. Kayotzeboy, and similarly, as far as the second machlokas, zochan the cotton, vein zochan the gadol divrei Rabbi Eliezer, that according to Yehuda's version, Rabbi Eliezer would say that you can be zoicha through a third party on behalf of a cotton, because otherwise he has no way of acquiring it. Again, whether we're talking about over here because he's a cotton far below the age of poitus, even whether we're talking about the fact that you can't be makna to him indirectly through kinyan chalifin without him being present, etc. But you can't do that for a gadol, because let him just be zoicha on his own. Divrei Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yeshua emel katan amar kavachom emel gadol, and Rabbi Yeshua says that if you can do it for a katan, how much more so you can do it for a gadol. So in other words, our Mishnah, when it says that the machloikas is about Shabbos versus weekday, that on Shabbos it works, but on weekday not, and that the machloikas as far as a gadol, that for a cotton it definitely works, and the question is for a gadol, that reflects Rabbi Yehuda's version of the machloikas, whereas Rabbi Meir's version of the machloikas would be the other way around. Okay. Now, usually Stam Mishnah to Meir, which is why the Gemara was bothered by that and asked the question in the first place. From here till the end of the Perek, we're going to be dealing with, so now we've been spending two Prakim over here dealing with the various Dinim of Yerusha. Now we have to deal with what happens when we have a Suffolk between two people, which one died first, in terms of who's yarshining him. So to take the first example that we're going to have here in the Mishnah, you have, for example, the first example we're going to have is, for example, a father and a son both died. We don't know which one first. Now that's going to make a difference in terms of what happens, for example, if the son owes money to people, as we're going to see in the Mishnah. So we're going to have the next couple of Mishnayas are going to deal with such cases. The expression the Mishnah is going to use is nafal habayis, where a house collapsed on them, but of course it doesn't apply only to that. It applies to any case, any. First of all, it could be any kind of circumstances where two people like that die and we don't know which one died first. It could even be, for example, that they're in two different places and both of them died and we don't know which one actually died first, even though it's two separate incidents. So from here to the end of the parak, we're going to be dealing with such dinim. So the Mishnah says, Nafal abayis olaval oviv. Suppose that a house collapses on a man and his father. So we'll give them names. That Rashbam says we're talking about, let's say, Reuven and his father Yaakov. Now, because it was a house collapse or anything like that, so we don't know which one died first. Or the same thing would apply if it was on a person and anybody from whom he would yarshin. So for example, let's say it was Reuven and one of his brothers. So let's say brother of Reuven is childless, and therefore when he dies, so let's say Shimon is childless, and when he dies, his nechassim are going to be split up among his brothers, one of them being Reuven. So again, we don't know whether Reuven or Shimon died first, for example. Now, suppose that Reuven owes money for his wife's ksuba, or he owes to a Baal Choyv, and he doesn't have anything else to collect from. So now, the argument becomes, Yoshe ha'av oimrim ha'ben mesrishin. So the ones who are in line to inherit from the father, so let's go back to the first case where it was Reuven and Yaakov, the ones who yarshin from the father, his other sons, for example, are claiming ha'ben mesrishin. The son, Reuven, died first. So what happens for now? This would apply, that Ashbam points out, based on, we're going to learn in the Gemara at the end of the Perek, on Kufnun Tesamad Beis, that this claim would be whether Reuven himself has sons, and the sons are the ones making the claim, or whether it's Reuven's brothers, Shimon and Levi and so forth. Either way, they're saying like this. Reuven owes money for this Ksubas Isha, for example, but he never inherited these Nechosim from Yaakov because he died before Yaakov did. So we don't have to pay that Ksubas Isha. So they argue, Ben Mesrishin, the son died first, V'achakach Mesa'av, and then the father died, and therefore the Nechosim never went to Reuven. So there's nothing for the Ksubas Isha to be paid out of. Meanwhile, the ones to whom Reuven owes the money say, Ha'av Mesrishin, V'achakach Mesaben. They say the father died first and then the son. So Yaakov died and Reuven inherited his property or some part of it at least. And then Reuven died. So now for momentarily it was in Reuven's possession, and therefore now it goes to us, the Balei Choyves or his widow, to collect the ksuba.
Even if Reuven died first, doesn't his Yarshim get his pool of money?
Yes, if we're talking about brothers of Reuven, then they're not Yarshining through Reuven, then they're Yarshining directly from Yaakov. So therefore, they're certainly saying that Reuven has nothing to do with it. If Reuven died first, if we're talking about Reuven's sons, then Ashbam refers to a Gemara that we're going to learn at the end of the Perek, where still they have the right to say we're not Yarshining from Reuven, we're Yarshining from Yaakov, and the reason why is because we're Yaakov's grandchildren, but still that shouldn't require us to that shouldn't mean that the Nechosim were ever in Reuven's hands and therefore that we should have to pay it. We're going to see in the Gemara there is a concept called mitzvah le'yisomim of freya chov aviyem. There is a concept that the yisomim do have a mitzvah to pay their father's debts. We're going to get to that in the Gemara. But in terms of that the Nechosim actually should have to go to those Baalei Choyves, then they're arguing not necessarily. Yeah. Now, by the way, I mean, in each case, they're not. Nobody's claiming a tainus bori over here. Nobody knows for sure what happened inside that collapsed house, who actually died first. When they're saying a ben mesrishin, a av mesrishin, they're saying maybe. They're both making a tainus shema. Anyway, so beshama amim yachloiku. So Beis Shammai says what they have to do is they have to split the nechosim. So the yoshim of the father and the people who are owed the money are going to divide the money because mamon amutal b'safik, and nobody is muchzik in it more. Nobody has more of a chazaka than the other over it. Now the reason is that the Rashbam refers to a Gemara in the Rashbam refers to a Gemara in Yevamos that explains like this. On the face of it, it's not a suffix against a suffix. After all, the Yoshim of the father have a chazaka, have a certain chazaka in the money. We know that the money was in the family, and the Baal Choyv is only a suffix. But Beis Shammai holds of a concept called shtar ha'omid ligvois kegavri dami. When you have a shtar that's ready to be collected, it's considered as if it was already collected. Therefore, Beis Shammai says that the Baal Choyv can be considered as though they have a certain chazaka on this property already. So therefore, so and since they and the Yoshim both have an equal level chazaka, then Beis Shammai says yachloku. Or Beis Hillel oimim nechasim b'chazkasim. Whereas Beis Hillel says they don't hold of that concept. Shtaro imed ligbus kigavri yami. They say that no, look, one way or the other, these Yoshim are inheriting. Either they're inheriting it from Yaakov, or they're inheriting it from they're inheriting it from Reuven. So therefore, so either way, whether we're talking about Reuven's brothers or Reuven's sons or whatever, either way, they're more muchzik in it than the Baalei Choyves, and therefore the Baalei Choyves ain't suffik motzi midei vadai. The fact that there's a suffik whether Reuven died first or Yaakov is not reason enough. Is not reason enough to take away this property, to take away any of this property from them. And therefore, we just say that, that if there's Baalei Choyves want to get anything, they're going to have to prove, and they can't, of course. Okay. So the Gemara brings a different point, which we're going to relate back to our Mishnah. We're going to start discussing a point, and then we're going to bring in our Mishnah as a proof. So Tnan Hossam, we learn in a Mishnah at the end of our Masechta, the last Mishnah of our Masechta, in fact, Hamalves Chaveira B'Shtar, a person lends money to somebody else with a shtar, and that creates a shibud, Goyvim Nechosim B'Shabodim. So then the Malva is able to collect from Nechosim B'Shabodim, meaning even, so now that some of that property was sold to somebody else. So now you have always the rule. You can't collect from the Shabbatim where there are Bnei Chorin available. But if there are no Bnei Chorin available, nothing that the loiva owns anymore, then you can collect from the buyers. Rashbam points out over here, you even have, there's the whole discussion that we learned in Bava Metzia about Achrayus Tos Sofer or not, that we say the halacha is Achrayus Tos Sofer, even if the shtar doesn't say that there's Achrayus on it. So there we're talking about Achrayus Tos Sofer primarily. We're talking about when you sell land, that even if you didn't write that I'm selling it to you by Achrayus, it's considered as if you did. Here we're talking about as far as the shtar, even if the shtar doesn't say anything about that I'm taking a shibud, nevertheless, it's considered Tos Sofer because a person wouldn't just want to waste his money, and therefore, so it means that the Achrayus is implicit in the shtar. And the whole reason is, the reason why we can collect from the Chosim Mishabadim is because the people who bought this property, they knew that there was a shibud over there. And if they want to go and take their chances, then that's their problem and they're taking their risks. Al Yidei Edim, on the other hand, the Mishnah says that if the loan was taken out only with Edim and there was no shtar, Goyvim Nechosim Nechorin, then the Malva can collect only from Nechosim Nechorin, because then there's not a coil. Then you can't say that the Lakochas knew that they're buying land on which there's a shibud, because they didn't know, because there's no shtar, and therefore there's no koil. So that's a basic din, and everybody agrees to that. Boy Shmuel. Now, within that, we're going to have when we get to that point a couple of weeks from now, Be'ez Hashem, we're going to talk about the basis behind these dinim, but that is the din no matter what. So now, Boy Shmuel, though, Shmuel asks the question, what about the Ikni? What about if there's a shtar, and he writes out to there to say that I'm mishabed to you? Now, normally, the shibud is going to apply to anything that he owns currently. What about if he writes out in the shtar, de ikni, he says that I'm mishabed everything that I own now and everything that I'm going to buy in the future? Eventually, that became the regular thing. We do write in a shtar, de kanoyu, de osedan olamikni, like we have in an aksuba, for example, everything that I've bought and everything that I will buy and everything that I will buy. So the question is, mahu, what would be the din? Now, if later, ordinarily, in other words, the shibud only applies to nechosim that he owned at the time of the halva, unless he writes to ikni. So now Shmuel is asking, if he writes to ikni, mahu, what would be the din? Does the shibud apply to those properties as well? Or maybe we say you can't do it because davar shaloi bala olam, because he doesn't own it yet. So, Aliba did a mayor dharma or the makna dovashale bala olam, according to the mayor who says that a person could be makna something that doesn't yet exist, as we've learned earlier in our perek, then loyti boilach, devade kana. Then there's no question that he would be koine, he would be able to be mishabed the nechosim that he doesn't have yet. We see, for example, Rav Meir allows you to sell, for example, peres dekel, fruit from a tree that hasn't yet grown, or similarly, Rav Meir would allow a person who's not yet a ger to be mekadesh a woman, almanas, that should take effect after he's niskayer, so therefore, no question it would work over here. But the question would be according to the Chachamim, who say that you can't be makna dover shalai bala olam. So the question would be, the question would be, that's as far as kinyan, but maybe a shtibud is different. You can't be makna something that doesn't yet exist, but maybe you can be mishabed something that doesn't yet exist. That's one possibility that Rashbam says. Another point, and the point would be, in other words, that we would say, according to Rav Meir, listen, even the fruit that doesn't exist yet, you're able to be makna. How much more so here? The land actually exists; you just don't own it yet. So therefore, said Rav Meir would certainly allow it. But according to the Chachamim, would we say when it comes to being makna something, maybe you can't because you don't own it yet, but maybe a shibud you could because the fact is the land does already exist. Another point is that Ashbam says maybe the Chachamim would say that a shibud would be stronger than a kinyan over here, because Shalatino delas bifnei loivin, as we have the usual rule that the Chachamim don't want to discourage people from lending money, and if a person doesn't write to ikni, then there could be the possibility that he later on he's going to acquire property and the malva is going to want to collect from it and he's not going to be able to. So maybe the Chachamim would allow him to be meshabed that land even though he hasn't acquired it yet. There's other points among Rishonim as well, what the question is. Tosfos also makes a point in general that a kinyan, you have to actually be makna. A shibud happens automatically. So that would be another reason why maybe even according to the Chachamim, the shibud should work. And then the Yad Ramah points out another thing as well. When it comes to a shibud, it can be transferred to a third party without any further ado. It's called shibud de Rav Nosson, which we've learned about before. If Reuven owes Shimon money and Shimon owes Levi money, then we say the payment goes directly from Reuven to Levi, and Reuven can't say to Levi when he takes him to Beis Din, wait, la bal dvorim didiat, I have nothing to do with you. I didn't borrow money from you, because Levi is coming from the koyach of Shimon. Whereas when it comes to being machne, then you see you need what we learned before about maimed shloshtan, that you need that if somebody else owes you money, then to be machne to somebody else you need maimed shloshtan, you need all three of them to be standing there. So that would be another reason why a shibud would be stronger than a kinyan. Okay, so that's Shmuel's question. Amr of Yosef Toshma. So Rabbi Yosef says we can prove from a Mishnah in Ksubas. The Mishnah describes over there a case where Reuven says, I have a shtar choiv against you, Shimon, that you owe me money. And then Shimon pulls out and says, you know what? And I have a document that says that Reuven, that you sold me this land. Now, I gave you money for that land. If I actually owed you money, why don't you collect your debt from that money instead of going and selling me the land? So that shows that I don't actually owe you the money. So do we accept that? Do we accept that claim or not? So the Mishnah says over there that Admon says that yes, that's a valid claim, and the Chachamim say that no. The Chachamim omim zehoye pikeach shemocholayis akarka. On the contrary, Reuven can argue, I was very smart by selling you this karka and not collecting my debt at that time, and rather than collecting my debt, mipneshu yochol lemashkinoy olav, because after all, that gives me something to be able to take as a mashkin, meaning in other words, like this, before that you didn't have any, karka, and when I came to collect the debt, you could say, I don't have money right now, and therefore I'll pay you another time. Now you have karka, and I'm able to collect it. The point being, this is a case where he bought karka after the loan, obviously, because that's the scenario. And yet it's very clear, according to the Chachamim, that that he's able to collect that, that he's able to collect that. So therefore, so you see that with even if without de'ikni, even without this this clause, de'ikni, that would work. But Rava says you're trying to prove from something, you're trying to prove from that case where the Baal Choyv wants to collect from the person himself. No, because when it comes to a Baal Choyv collecting, he can, when he's collecting from the person himself, he can collect even from the shirt off his back. There's no question everything that the loiva has of his own, karka and metalklin, is all meshubad to the malva. So of course, with de'ikni or not. The whole question that Shmuel is having about de'ikni is kona or machar. The question is rather where he wrote the ikni and then he bought and then he bought and sold property or bought and bequeathed it to somebody else. My, there's the question of whether the ikni works for things that he didn't own at the time that he bought only later. So that Mishnah in Ksubas has nothing to do with the topic. So Amar Rav Chana Toshma. So Rav Chana says, fine, let's bring a proof from our Mishnah, which is why we're bringing in the sugya over here. Nafal Abayis Olaval Aviv, Olaval Merishav, where we have the case where a house collapsed, or there's some other case where there's a suffix who died first between a person and his father, or between a person and anybody else he's in line to Yarshin from. V'hoysal of Ksubas Isha Baal Choyv, and he owed money for a woman's Ksuba or for a Baal Choyv. Yosha Av Omim HaBen Mesirishin V'achakat Mesahav, where again, as we said, the Yoshim of Yaakov, whether we mean Yaakov's other sons or whether we mean Reuven's sons, are arguing that the son Reuven died first, v'achakach nesa'av, and only then the father, and therefore so we got the nechassim, and the ksubas isha and baal choyv are frozen out, or baal choyv is omim ha'av mesrushin chola, and the baal choyv say the father died first and therefore it went to Reuven, and we have to get as a result of the fact that Reuven left it. So says Rav Chana, v'isakadaydach de'ikni kona. If you're going to say in Shmuel's question that when you write de'ikni, then when he writes de'ikni, it works even if he bought property afterwards and sold it to somebody else, or even if he bought property afterwards and bequeathed it to somebody else, loy mishtabed. If you're going to say that in that case, it's not a shibud, then what does our mission mean? Nehi nami da'av misbereisha. Even if the father died first and then bequeathed it to Reuven, what do you mean? De'iknihu. This is a case of where Reuven got that property only after the fact, because at the time of the halva, or at the time of the ksubas isha, he didn't own that property yet. So then it would make no difference whether Yaakov died first or Reuven died first, if you say that de'ikni is not meshubad. Therefore, obviously, the answer has to be that de'ikni does create a shibud on it. So therefore, in other words, fine, we can be talking about where there was a de'ikni clause over here in the shtar. So Reuven had written in his ksuba or in the loan document or whatever, he had said that I'm also meshabed anything else that I'm going to buy in the future. Well, or anything else that I'm going to acquire in the future. Well, very well then, if Yaakov dies and a moment later Reuven dies, then Reuven had a moment where he yarshin this property, and now the ksubas isha. And then now the Isha and the Baalei Choyves can come and claim it. And all we're saying, Basil is saying that, look, you know, unless you have a solid proof, who died first, then Hamotzi Mechavel of Araya. But the point is, in other words, without that, if we said that De'ikni doesn't work to do that, then it wouldn't matter who died first. Either way, that property wasn't owned by Reuven at the time he took out the loan or the ksuba. So from our Mishnah itself, we can answer Shmuel's question. And the answer is, Omelahu Rab Nachman. So Rab Nachman says to the Chachmei Yeshiva who are discussing it, where again, first we had Rab Yosef and Rava involved, and now we have Rav Chana. So Rab Nachman tells them no, because that's not really a proof. Ze'ira Chavrin Tirgama, Ze'ira, our colleague, Rab Zera, meaning Tirgama, he explained that it's a different case over here. It's not a matter of de'ikni or not. Mitzvah la Yisoymim l'freya chovas avihim. The Yisoymim have a mitzvah to pay off their father's debts. And therefore, because of that is why the Balei Chovos or the Ksubas or the Isha are coming and collecting. So when it comes to, so if it was that a person had taken out a loan and then bought property and later on sold it to somebody else, we would not say that De'ikni works. But here we were talking about that he died and he bequeathed it to somebody else. Then we can say that the Yoshim have a mitzvah to pay off the debt. And that's why the Balei Chovos or whoever are coming and claiming to collect. Tosfos also adds then that in that case, that would mean that the point is then that we would force the Yisoymim to pay that because of that mitzvah. As long as he left them karka, then we would force them to do that because that's what we're dealing with over here. So the idea behind mitzvah leisem of freya chov avihem, there's some discussion among the Rishonim what the idea behind it is. Is it a matter of covered for their father? In that case, then maybe it would apply only if they yarshin from their father, not necessarily if a person yarshin from other, not necessarily if a person yarshin from other relatives. And in fact, a number of Rishonim say just that. But then there's another idea behind it is, That not so much a matter of kibud av, but they have the same shibud that was on the original loiva is on them. It's a concept that we're going to talk about at the end of the Masechta. Shibud deraisu, shibud derabanan is the whole concept of shibud min haTorah, or is it only created by the Chachamim? So therefore, and that factors in over here whether So we would say that they have the obligation to pay. So that's a separate thing than de'ikni. That's just a separate thing. As long as they yarshin something from him, then they have to pay it. In fact, the Rashba goes further and says even if they didn't yarshin anything, they still have the mitzvah. We can't force them to do it. But nevertheless, they'd still have that mitzvah. Most of the other Rishonim learned that if they didn't yarshin anything, they wouldn't even have the mitzvah. Be that as it may, the point is that in our Mishnah, the extent that the Isha or the Balei Chovos are coming to claim is on the grounds of mitzvah le'yisomim lefroya, not necessarily because of a de'ikni clause over there that would actually obligate them as a matter of strict halacha to pay it off. But the Gemara says maskif l'Rabashi. So Rabashi says, so you're telling me that's not a matter of shibud, it's a matter of mitzvah le'yisomim. In that case, milval pehu. Then in effect, all we have is a milval peh. So how are we collecting from such property any from real estate that belongs to the Yisoymim anyway? The Rav Shmuel da Amitavayu, don't Rav and Shmuel both say Milval Peh Ene Gova Loimina Yoshin Voloimina Lakuchas, that when it was a verbal loan without a shtar, then you can't collect from Yoshim or from buyers. And in other words, the whole concept of mitzvah yisomim lefreya chov avihem would apply only if the loan was with a shtar. So you can't say it's just a matter of mitzvah yisomim. We have to be talking about where there was a shtar. Well, if there was a shtar, on the face of it, it's only going to work if you have de'ikni in it. And therefore, yes, that would be so. It would be a valid answer. Rav Chana's point was valid that from our Mishnah, you can learn that where there was de'ikni, then there's going to be a shibud on that property, and therefore that now the Baal Chov or the woman can be coming and claiming that we should get it by virtue of the fact that Reuven yarshin it for a moment. So Rav Ashi says no. Ella homani the meyuhi no. So evidently you have to say that our Mishnah would maybe that the Tana of our Mishnah would maybe hold only according to the meyuh. Where again, Rav Meir says that a person can be makna something that doesn't yet exist, and in that case, that he can make a shibud on something that he doesn't yet exist. The Chachamim disagree with that concept, and therefore, and therefore not necessarily would our Mishnah be the would our Mishnah represent the final halacha. Shmuel's suffix anyway about the ikni is according to the Chachamim, not according to the Meir. Okay, so the Gemara says, Omer Rabbi Yaakov Minahar Pekud Meshmed Ravina. So Rabbi Yaakov from Nahar Pekud says in the name of Ravina Toshma. Fine, let's try to bring a different proof. We learn in a Mishnah in Masech the Shvius of all places, because there it's talking about a Prusbul, and there it's the last parak of Shvius talks about the dinim of Shemitas Ksofim and the dinim of Prusbul, and it mentions over there about a Prusbul that's predated versus post-dated. And what are the dinim in that? So then in that case, the Mishnah also digresses there a moment to talk about a similar kind of thing, predated versus post-dated as far as other shtaris. So the Mishnah says, shtori choyv ha-mukdamin, a shtar choyv that's predated. So for example, the Rashbam gives an example that the shtar was actually written on Tesvav Nissen, which is a little odd for the Rashbam to say that, given that Tesvav Nissen is the first day Pesach. But anyway, the point is it was written sometime in the middle of Nissen, and the shtar is actually written in it that the shtar is actually dated. They put the date on the shtar of Aleph Nissen 2 weeks earlier. So in other words, the date written on the shtar is actually earlier than the date when it was actually written. The Rashbam also talks about that the fact is, now you could also have a case, for example, that you could also have a case where in fact he truly borrowed the money on Aleph Nissen, and there were Edim, and they made a Kinyan, but they just didn't get around to writing the shtar until 2 weeks later. That would be fine. That concept we're going to learn in the last parak, we're going to learn about that. But here we're talking about where the loan was not actually taken out on Aleph Nissen. It was actually taken out later in the month, and then, or it was taken out earlier in the month, but they didn't do the Kinyan. And now later on, when they're writing it, they're predating it. Psulin, so such shtaris are posel. And the problem is, because what's going to happen is, consider, suppose that our loiva over here sold property to somebody else before Tesvav Nissen, after Aleph Nissen, but before Tesvav Nissen. There's no shibud on that property because he bechlal didn't own it at the time that he took out the loan, which was Tesvav Nissen. So therefore, so now, later on, the malva is going to come bring out the shtar and say that I want to collect from Nechosim that Reuven sold to you on Vov Nissen or whatever, on Zayin Nissen, whatever, sometime in the middle of the month. And that's wrong because he hadn't taken out the loan yet at the time. So therefore, the shtar is posel because you're going to end up taking from Lekuchos improperly. Tosfos discusses over here and discusses at length at the beginning of Masechta Rosh Hashanah and in some other places about the big Machlokas who shown him on that. Do we mean the shtar is completely posel? Or do we mean, the Gemara actually in Bava Metzia brings up the point, which Tosfos mentions over here. Fine, you can't collect from property that was sold earlier, but why shouldn't you at least be able to collect from the date the actual halvah was taken out? So fine, what we'll have is, we'll have Edim come and say that in fact, even though the shtar says Aleph Nissen, in fact, the loan was only taken out and the shtar was only written on Tesvav Nissen. And then based on that, then he should be able to collect from then and on. So the Gemara discusses in Bava Metzia why that's so, why we are saying that it's possible, that it's possible. Within that, you have Machlokas Rishonim. Do we mean that it's possible to use that it's possible to use for that's possible to use to collect from Nechosim Meshubadim, but at least you can collect from Nechosim Bnei Chorin with it. Or you have Tosfos mentions over here and discusses in some other places in Shach and in Shas that in fact it would be possible completely, and you can't even use that shtar as a raya at all. Which would mean if the loiva were to claim, for example, that he paid off the debt, then it would work. So then it would work. He could claim that he paid, and the shtar itself wouldn't be usable as a raya. That's according to Tosfos. Anyway, so hamukdomin psulin v'hamulchorin. But the other way around, if the document is post dated, then it would be kosher. As far as mukdamin, the Rashbam also explains that really there's two possibilities with mukdamin. One is we just said, for example, that it was written on Tesvav and predated to Aleph. The other possibility is that the shtar was in fact written on Aleph Nissen. And it says Aleph Nissen, but the loan itself was only taken out on Tesvav. So we have two possibilities of Shtori Choyv HaMukdamin. Either way, we're saying Psulin, where again, what we mean by why it's possible completely, the Gemara discusses in Bava Metzia, but you also have whether it actually does mean it's possible completely. So the Gemara discusses over there why it's possible even from the time when the loan was actually taken out from Tesvav and onward, even if we have Edim to that effect. But then you have them, again, the Machlokas Rashi and Tosfos, whether it means you can't collect with the shtar at all if the loiva denies the claim, or whether it means you could collect, but you can't collect from Nechosim Mishabadim. Anyway, but you have the other way around, a shtar that's post-dated, sharing, then it would be kosher. So there you have, again, you have two possibilities. You can have where the loan itself was taken out in Nissan and the shtar was only written the following Tishrei, or you can have that it was written on the day of the loan, but you wrote a later date. You wrote a later date in it. Either way, that shtar is kosher, because fine, what it means is the malva is willing to forego the shibud for that amount of time between when the loan was taken out and the date and the shtar. So it means, in other words, if anybody bought proper, so for example, in our scenario involving Nissan and Tishrei, it would mean that if Reuven now goes and then and sells property to somebody else, an Ear or a Sivan or what have you, then the Malva is saying that I'm willing to forego and I'm not going to collect from that, only from things that you own and that you sell from Tishrei onward. So therefore, the shtar itself would be kosher. Now, so Rabbi Yaakov says, V'sakadaitach, if you're going to tell me that with Shmuel's question about the ikni, if you're going to say that if afterwards he buys property after the shtar is written and then sells it, then if we were to say that there's no shibud, or that if he bought property afterwards and bequeathed it to somebody else, then there would be no, then if you're going to say that, you're going to say, loy mishtabed, mu'uchoren, amai kshedin, well, then we have to ask, why would post-dated shtaris be valid? After all, de'ikni hu, because after all, you have, there's de'ikni involved over here. He writes Tishrei over there. So what's going to happen? Now you have the other problem. Till now we were focusing on that you have property that he owned in Nissan and that he sold during Iyar or Sivan or what have you, and you're saying the Malva is willing to forego his shibud on those. Very nice. But we also have property. We could also conceivably have property that the loiva bought in Iyar or Sivan or what have you, which he didn't own at the time of the loan, and now later on the Malva is going to. The Malva is going to claim that he can collect from them because Reuven owned them in Tishrei, and therefore how's that going to work? If there's no shibud, then it shouldn't work. He shouldn't be able to do that. So that shows necessarily we have to say de'ikni does work, and therefore we're saying when he actually takes out the loan in Nissan and is saying over there that I'm including de'ikni, anything that I'm going to buy in the future, then yes, it includes those properties that he buys in Iyar and Sivan or any time during the rest of the summer, and therefore so forget the Malva is willing to forego his shibud and anything that Reuven sells during that time, but he still retains a shibud and anything that Reuven buys during that time, and there's no problem one way or the other. When it comes to the date on the shtar of Tishrei, any property that Reuven has at that time is under the shibud. He bought it after the halvah was truly taken out in Nissan. Doesn't matter. The ikni works. So that's the only way. Rabbi Yaakov is saying it seems that's the only way to make that mishnah work, to allow that shtar, that post dated shtaris would be valid. So again, the Gemara answers Homani to Meir Hidom or to Machna Dover Shalai Balarlam. Again, you could say that Mishnah is only a coincidence of Meir, that you're able to be Machna, something that doesn't exist yet, in this case, that you don't own, and in this case, to make a Shibud on something that you don't own yet. And again, that doesn't necessarily work according to the Chachamim. All right, the Gemara says, Omer of Mesharshi of Meshmei Dirova, Toshma. Come, let's bring another proof. We learned that now a Mishnah in Gittin tells us that there's a number of cases where you can't collect from Nechosim Meshubadim, Mipnei Tikuna Olam, because in order, the Chachamim made Tekonis in order to allow society to function. We touched on, for example, earlier in our Perek, that for one example of that is Mazana Isha Vahabonis, where, for example, to supply food to a woman before she collects her, to the almana, before she collects her ksuba, or the daughters until they're of age. So you can't collect from nechasim mishabadim mifnei tikkun ha'olam, because it's an open-ended thing. Who would be willing to buy property from somebody who has such an obligation on him, when they don't know how much that obligation of mizonis for the wife and the daughters is going to end up being over the years? Another one that it mentions over there is shtvach karkois, is where you have improvement of karka. So what does that mean? So Brisa explains the shtvach karkois ketzad. What do we mean when we say that you can't collect for shvach karkois from nechosim b'shabodim? So harei shemocha sodal chaveri, Reuven sold a field to Shimon, v'hishbicha, and Shimon improved that field by plowing and planting and doing whatever, and fertilizing and whatever. Ubo bal choy v'torfa, and a bal choy of Reuven comes to collect collects the property from Shimon, because again, Reuven doesn't have any real estate of his own at this point. So now what happens is there was a chrayus involved over here. And again, even if there wasn't a chrayus written in the shtar, as we learned on Omer Aleph, it's considered as though it was written. So now Shimon comes back to Reuven and says, you know what, you need to reimburse me for the fact that your Baal Chayv came and collected the property from me. So Kshu Goyve, when he collects from Reuven, Goyve has a keren min achosim shabadim. The keren, the basic amount that he paid for the field, that he can collect even from nechosim shabadim, because that's a regular chayv. That's a shvach, but to pay for the improvements that he made in the karka, that he can collect only minachosim and echorin, only from nechosim that Reuven actually owns at the time. Because again, mipnei tikkun olam, otherwise the shvach might be a completely open-ended thing. And therefore, we don't want to put other people who bought from Reuven on the hook to pay for that, because they never know how much it could be. Tosfos actually wonders, I mean, if Reuven has property for Shimon to collect from, then why is the Baal Chayv collecting from Shimon in the first place? What happened to you can't collect from the Shabbatim where there's no B'nai Chorin? And then Shimon can say the expression, Hinachti l'chom mokum l'gvisemenu, that look, I left property in Reuven's hands that you could collect from. So Tosfos talks about, you're talking about that, let's say Reuven has only Nechosim B'Shabadim, and then later on, when Reuven buys Nechosim B'nei Chorin, then Shimon is going to collect from him from the B'nei Chorin at that time. Whether we're talking about over here in the sugya about the ikni, but still, it would certainly work as far as the lekeach being able to collect from the moicher. Tosfos only mentions this point briefly over here. They explain it in more detail in Bava Metzia, and the Bach brings it over here in Agoyis HaBach, when we're talking about the lekeach collecting, that the lekeach would in fact be able to collect one way or the other, because he can collect from, he can collect even from nechosim b'shabadim for his first for the basic amount, and then when it comes to the shvach, then he can collect only from nechosim b'nechorin. So and that would work even for on property that Reuven didn't own yet at the time. So actually, the Bach and the Marsha discusses and gives a different explanation of Tosfos about how it is exactly that when we say that the Baal Chayv is collecting from Shimon versus from Reuven, and how is it that Shimon is able to go and collect from Reuven? Whatever the case, the point is that says the Mesharshia, if you were to think that there's no shibud in that case, then you have to ask in the first place, why is the Baal Chayv even collecting the shvach? When he collects the field to pay off Reuven's debt, the shvach didn't exist at the time. So we should say, to begin with, he's only allowed to collect from the actual field as it existed. And that means, in other words, if the field was worth only 100 at the time that it was sold, and now it's worth 120 as a result of the improvements, and the choyv was 120, we should say he can't take the whole field, because how could he take the shvach in the first place? It wasn't under a shibud to him. He should only be able to take $100 worth of the field. So the Gemara again answers Halmani Rav Meir. He again, you could say that Braisa goes according to the Meir Dama Odom Makna Dover Shalabala Olam, that he could be Makna something that doesn't exist yet, and he could be Meshabed something that doesn't exist yet.
So that would work. But according to the whole question is according to the Chachamim over here. There is discussion among Rishonim anyway. I mean, even Reb Meir is only saying only Davidi de Osu, only things that are likely to come, not necessarily over here where the Shvach didn't even exist. By the time the Shvach is created, it already belongs to Shimon the Lekeach. And there's a number of answers that Rishonim give how such a thing can work. In any case, with every question that the Gemara has asked, the answer was that could be according to Reb Meir, and not necessarily would the Chachamim agree that that would work. And here the whole question about Deikni is according to the Chachamim. So the Gemara says, "Im timtza loyma deikni kono macha deikni kono v'hodesh loyma shtabin." Now, if you're going to answer, that in fact the answer to Shmuel's question would be that it doesn't work. The ifni does not create a shibud on that property that he's going to buy in the future. Well, then fine. The answer would be holo mishtabed. Then the answer would be very simple that it's not mishubud, and therefore that the malva would not be able to collect from that property that he bought after the fact. That again, we would say everything that we said until now that implies that he could would be only according to that mayor. But im timtza loyma mishtabed. But if you're going to say that that it does create a shibud, and therefore that when you write de'ikni, it does work, and if the loiva buys property later or acquires property later, that it would work, and it is in fact under the shibud, and that would mean now we wouldn't have to say then in that case that all of the mishnayos and braisos that we brought so far are only according to the mayor. We could say the chachamim agree with them as well. If we're going to say that, well then we have a question. What about lover? What about if Reuven borrowed from Shimon and wrote to Ikni the lover, and then he borrowed more money from Levi, and he also wrote to Ikni the chos of a connor, and then he bought property after that, and now he sold it to somebody else or bequeathed it to somebody else. Mahu, the question would be now, yes, obviously there's a shibud because we're talking over here according to the possibility that to Ikni creates a shibud on that property. But the question would be, l'kama mishtabed or l'basra mishtabed? Who gets the shibud? The first one, Shimon, or the second one, Levi? Because on the one hand, we could say that that Shimon has the earlier shtar. On the other hand, we could say that, look, the fact is that when does the shibud take effect? Only when he buys the nechosim. And when he buys the nechosim, both shibudim already existed, and therefore maybe the second one has the stronger claim. Or maybe you could say that both of them have an equal claim. So the Gemara says, "Amar Rav Nachman, Ha Milsa Iboylon." We had this question in Bavel. So we sent the question to Eretz Yisrael. The Shochu Mitam, they sent back from there, from Eretz Yisrael, Rishon Kona. That in that case, the first one is Kona. The Shibud goes to the first one, to Shimon, because again, he has the earlier Shtar. Therefore, the Shibud goes to him. Rav Huna Omar Yachloiku. Rav Huna says he disagrees with what the Chacham of Eretz Yisrael said. He says, no, the fact is they have an equal claim, and therefore Yachloiku, they're going to split it. V'chein Toni Rabba Baravur Yachloiku. Rabba Baravur taught a braisa saying the same way is that Yachloiku, because they both have the shibud. Actually, you have here the Rashbam is saying it's just a matter of because the shibud is equally for both of them. The Rambam actually phrases it and says that it means if one of them collected first, and he was Zoicha, we're talking about Chokim, you're talking about Yachloiku, only where they both come together to Beis Din, and therefore, in other words, so the Ritva understands to say, the Rambam would say, the reason is not because we're saying over here they both have an equal claim, but because the Suffolk, who has the stronger claim, and therefore if one of them is Toifus, then it would work. So the Gemara points out that Omer Avina, Mahadura Kama de Rav Ashi, during Rav Ashi's first review of the Gemara, Omelon Rishon Kona, he told us, like the opinion of the Chachmei Eretz Yisrael, that the first one is Koina, the Shibud goes to the first one, to Reuven, to Shimon. Madura Bastra de Rav Ashi, then when Rav Ashi re-reviewed it, Omelon Yachloiku, then he told us that they split it. Whether we say like the Rashbam because they both have an equal Shibud, or whether we say or whether we say like the Rambam, because of like the Ritva's understanding of the Rambam, because there's a Sufet. V'hilchse yachloiko, when the halacha is, in fact, they divide it. What is this Mahadura Kama and Mahadura Basra? So the Rashbam gives a first explanation. It just means when he taught us the first time, and then when he re-reviewed and taught us the second time, and Rabbeinu Gershom explains similarly. Then the Rashbam brings a very interesting idea. He brings from a tshuva of Rav Hai, it's actually a tshuva of Rav Shura Goyen, it's the famous Igeris of Rav Shura Goyen, that what they had is, they had a system in the yeshivas in Bavel, every half year they would learn one masechta of Shas. So at the beginning of the Zman, Elul and Adar, respectively, they would announce, or actually the Rashbam says Nisan and Tishrei, they would announce what masechta is going to be learned during the next 6 months. So therefore, there are about 60 Masechtas in Shas, so therefore a cycle would take 30 years. Rav Ashi was Rosh Hashiva for almost 60 years. So therefore, Mahadura Kama would be the first 30 years when he's going through and eventually reach the Sugya in Bava Basra, and Mahadura Basra would be 30 years later when he's reteaching that same Masechta during the second cycle. There are, in fact, some who want to say, based on this, that Rav Ashi actually wrote the Gemara in a first version and then revised it to create a second version. And there are some Mefoshim who learn that way, that Tiferes Yisrael, for example, uses that to explain why some Masechtas seem to be less polished than others, because he says Rav Ashi didn't have a chance to go over them the second time. Interestingly, there's a Ksav Yad, there's a manuscript of Shas that contains pretty much the entire Shas. It's the only one known. There are other manuscripts that contain individual Masechtas or parts of them, but there's one particular one. It's located in the city of Munich, so they call it the Munich Manuscript. It was written in the 1300s, and it contains the whole Shas. It has, in many places, Girsoris that are different than the printed Gemara. It's said that there's a story that the Vilna Gaon once traveled there and looked at this Ksav Yad and was not really impressed by all the different differences in it between it and our printed Gemaras. And he said that apparently represents Mahadura Kama. People have pointed out various problems and inconsistencies with that story, but in any case, there is that notion that Rav Ashi actually edited and re-edited the Gemara in two different versions, but others say you don't have to say that necessarily. It just means this was all Baal Peh. They weren't writing down the Gemara yet. So it just means, like the Rashbam is saying, the first time they went it through, and then 30 years later when they learned it and went it through again. Okay. Anyway, the point is, the bottom line halacha is that, yes, in that case, Shimon and Levi divide it because they both have an equal level shibud, and because there's a suffix, which one should get it? So the Gemara says, Mesvi. Now, I have a contradiction, because a Braisa says, again, L'shvach kakois ketzad, as we talked about before, what does it mean that you don't collect from Nechosim v'shabodim, to pay shvach kakois? So we said, Harei shemachar soda l'chaveri, person sold a field to somebody else, v'ishbicha, and that buyer improved the property, or bo ba'al choyv v'torfa, and a ba'al choyv comes and collects the field to pay a debt, to Goiva, when he collects, when Shimon, the buyer, goes back to collect from Reuven, who sold him the field, Goiva is a keren nechosim b'shabadim, the basic amount, the amount he paid for the field, he can collect even from nechosim b'shabadim, v'es a shvach nechosim b'nei chorin, but to collect for the shvach, that he can do only from nechosim b'nei chorin, because again, it's an open-ended thing, you never know how much it was going to be, and we don't want to put the other buyers on the hook for that. Now, if you're telling me that v'im isa chatzi shvach mi boilei, if you're telling me that de'ikni creates a shibud over here, then why are you saying the Baal Chayv is taking all the shvach? At most, he should take half of it, because after all, you have there's a chrayus. Reuven has a chrayus to Shimon, so therefore it comes out that the malva from whom Reuven previously borrowed and Shimon to whom he sold the property are both owed money, and based on what we're saying, yachloiku, they should split it. So why to begin with is the Baal Chayv taking all of the shvach, and then we're telling Shimon you have to go back to Reuven to collect it? Okay, the Gemara says my goiva nami de katani chatzi shvach. You know what? Fine. When we say goiva, We don't mean that he collects all the shvach. We mean that he collects half of it. So you're right to begin with. Actually, then it means the Baal Chayv is collecting only half the shvach. And now again, he took the field and half the shvach. And now the question is that. And now Shimon is going back to Reuven and saying, "You sold me a field that had a shibud, and I improved it, and I need to be reimbursed for half that shvach that the Baal Chayv took away from me." Then we're going to work that out. And we're going to say what he can collect from Nechosim Meshubadim and what he can collect from the chosim, from the chosim bnei chorin. The Rashbam finishes off and says that actually Shmuel himself is asking. We have the whole sugya. Shmuel is asking about what happens to Ikni, where there Shmuel said as a statement that he can collect from Shvach. Where again, if the Ikni doesn't work, how is he collecting from that in the first place? So the Rashbam says, first of all, again, as we were saying throughout the sugya, maybe Shmuel was asking the question only according to the mayor. Or maybe the statement over there that Shmuel made in Bav Metzia is only according to the mayor, and he was asking, what about according to the Chachamim? That Shmuel himself, having asked the question, eventually answered it himself, as we said in the sugya over here, that yes, the Ikni works, and therefore that the Baal Chayv can collect from the Shvach. Tosfos brings on Amar Aleph that Shmuel would again, that again, we could say that Shmuel would hold that that yes, he's asking according to the mayor, but he's stating according to the mayor, he's saying that the power of Shibud is stronger according to the mayor. We would say that Shibud is even stronger than Kinyan, so he might not hold that, he might hold that when it comes to be Makna, something that Shaloi Bala Olam, he wouldn't hold like the mayor, but as far as a Shibud, he might, for the reasons that we said before, that Shibud is stronger.